From a studio high above the clouds of the Okanagan Valley, this is the Cannabis Podcast. Exploring the world of Canadian cannabis culture, one toke at a time. Now, here's your host and bud tender, Gary Johnston.
And welcome back once more. Thanks for coming on back to the Cannabis Podcast. If this is your first time, well, an even warmer welcome for you. You're going to spend the next 30 minutes or so immersed in a bunch of information about cannabis. In fact, here's what we got lined up for today. Guess what? It is harvest time. Certainly for many outgrowers here in BC, it is. And there's one in particular that is harvesting 60 acres of cannabis. We're going to look at that story, thanks to our friends at the Okanagan Z. I also have another listener-inspired conversation for you today. You're going to meet Mike Timms. Mike is the production supervisor for Premium 5 Concentrates, and he will give us a peek behind the production curtain, see what it's like for the LPs in producing all of this cannabis and all these other products for us. Plus, I thought it was time for another flashback, so we're going to go back to a time when I will demonstrate how cannabis had an impact on me even when I was on my lunch break. All of that and more is coming your way on episode 55 of the Cannabis Podcast. First of all, let's get to the harvest. Now, I will tease that I will be talking about my personal harvest sometime in the future. It will all make a lot more sense when I actually talk about it, but I have had a crop this year, quite a successful crop, and we'll talk about that. But that's not the crop I want to talk about today. I want to talk about a story that, again, I thank my friend David Wiley at the Okanagan Z for covering this. And in fact, I just heard it covered on our local radio as well. Speakeasy is the company's name. They are in Rock Creek, and they are now harvesting one of Canada's biggest outdoor crops, 60 acres of plants, 60 acres of tall, stinky, and individually potted plants. I am absolutely thrilled to have started the harvest of our outdoor grow, says founder Mark Keane. It's been a long road, and I'm happy to report the quality of the bud has exceeded all my expectations. The Keane family has been actively farming the Okanagan for five generations, and is also known for its significant involvement in the iconic Okanagan brand, Sunripe. The cannabis harvest started on September 21st and is expected to last for a few weeks. Located in Boundary Country at the southern end of Highway 33, Speakeasy is in a perfect spot to grow cannabis. And the conditions this summer were excellent, says the founder. Bud from the grow will be sold as flower, pre-rolls, and used in extract products such as oils and vapes. It's all hands on deck as we tackle this next challenge here at Speakeasy. And as anticipated, everyone is pulled together, making an extremely difficult process seem easy, says Keane. As always, I am so proud of our dedicated group of talented, hardworking employees. Without them, we would have nothing but a bunch of good ideas. Speakeasy owns 290 acres of land in Rock Creek. The company also cultivates small-batch, high-quality craft cannabis in its 10,000-square-foot indoor facility. And to add just a little bit to the Okanagan Z story, this is what I heard on the radio just a few minutes ago, that they are now one of the largest employers in the Rock Creek area and have about 30 employees. Good on you. It is so fabulous to hear about Canadian companies that are doing well, and I can't wait until their cannabis makes its way into the market and we can all get a taste of that Speakeasy cannabis. I am happy to have with me today a fellow who contacted me through email, and as always, you know that I love hearing from listeners. And I was especially intrigued about this one because Mike Timms is his name, and he raised the subject of never hearing anything on the podcast about the industry, what's happening from the industry's perspective with legalization. And I was thrilled to get the email, thrilled to have the conversation about that. So let me give you a bit of background on Mike. He's been in the industry basically since legalization, started as a manufacturing associate with Aurora, transferred to a leadership role in their concentrates division. That was pretty well right after our 2.0 hit. He is now a certified hydrocarbon extractor and has now chosen a slightly different path. In fact, Mike is the production supervisor for Premium 5, one of the largest cannabis concentrate suppliers in Canada. I have just become aware of Premium 5. We started bringing into the store. So Mike, welcome to the Cannabis Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Gary. I'm definitely excited to be here to share some information about the cannabis manufacturing world and hopefully dispel a few myths that I've heard floating around.
Well, and that's just it. There are so many myths out there, and dispelling some of those is what I'm trying to do. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I started the podcast. Not other than the fact that I like to smoke a lot of cannabis and talk about it, dispelling some of those myths is also pretty cool. Give me a sense of your background. I'm interested in your background from two perspectives. One, as a cannabis user, and two, in terms of what your role in the cannabis legal production world is.
Yeah, for sure. So my history with cannabis is actually very on and off. I did what most kids did, and I did some experimentation in high school and didn't really find a use for it or an enjoyment for it. But as of lately, since legalization and getting into the industry myself, I have started to pick it up a bit as a user and have gotten into it, because I feel that if you're going to work with something, you should probably know at least what you're working with and have the experience behind it. So
yeah, exactly. What got you so interested in working in the industry itself? What was your fascination there?
Well, it all started back when Aurora first built their Sky facility in just south of Edmonton. And I was actually on a construction crew that built the building. So I watched the entire building go up. I saw all of the automations that they were putting in, all of the advanced equipment that they were using, and it really got me intrigued. And so I figured, I'm already here. I'm already building it. I might as well apply and see what happens. And the rest is history.
Well, very cool, Mike. That's very cool. Everybody has their path that takes them to where they are, right?
Exactly.
And they all have deviations to it.
Yep.
So one of the things you brought up was the fact that you didn't think that there was an understanding, and there certainly isn't from my perspective, of what happens on the production floor in the cannabis world. Like what kind of challenges are LPs facing in delivering product for this world? And I think that's another place where I'd kind of like to start.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's definitely a world that not very many people know about or know that much about as a whole.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's for myself, it was very eye-opening getting into it and really understanding what it takes to produce anything, really, and anything in the manufacturing world.
Yeah, at scale.
Yeah, especially at scale. There's a lot of internal regulations, as well as making sure that everything is Health Canada certified and stays to Health Canada standards. There's a lot that goes into that in and of itself, because I know, especially at Aurora, we even held ourselves to a higher standard than the Health Canada standard. Falling within that while still maintaining the production necessary to feed the demand of the entire country is a challenge in and of itself. And when you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of units a day, there's always going to be things that slip through the cracks or things that get missed. So
I'm fascinated working in the industry and seeing how much cannabis moves through our store and realizing that, you know, we're just one piece of that puzzle. I'm astounded at how much cannabis is being produced to scale.
Yeah, it's absolutely mind-blowing.
It is.
When you even look at Aurora's facility there, the scale that they've got themselves at, the facility is 800,000 square feet with 16 fully functional grow bays. they can output massive amounts of cannabis per year.
Wow.
There's people that always say, oh, I saw, you know, 3 ounces of cannabis here, 3 ounces there. I've held entire kilos in my hands.
Yeah.
And that's something that I know not a lot of people can say that they've done.
No, it's true. And that is a pretty exciting feeling to hold that in your hand.
And the first time that ever happened is when it really hit home of the type of operation that was running and the type of things that could be accomplished through legalization. And that's what got me even more excited to continue in the industry and to see where it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's just fascinating. So what are some of the challenges on the production floor that people like myself, who know just a consumer of the product, have no idea?
Yeah. So one of the biggest things, one of the biggest issues that we've had is the weights of the cannabis within the bottles.
Okay. Yeah, I've experienced that myself, as you may be aware. I've talked about that a few times on the podcast.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest things. There's obviously some individuals that really take that to heart and say, hey, I bought 3.5 grams and there's only 3.47 or 3.45. But the biggest thing about that is Health Canada, in and of itself, allows a 10% tolerance on weight, plus or minus.
And do they allow the same tolerance on other drugs, or is it just on cannabis?
I'm not 100% sure about other drugs. I know the cannabis one is something that I think is still going to be refined further to kind of match up with other pharmaceuticals.
I bet. I wonder if they have that same allowance tolerance in alcohol in terms of the alcohol volume.
Yeah, that again, I'm not sure. Also, you have to take into consideration with alcohol as well. The industry has been around a lot longer, and they've had a lot more time to refine their manufacturing processes.
Yeah,
and that's looking at where cannabis is. We're very young.
Oh boy, you got that right.
Yeah. So at this point, we're trying to piece parts together from other industries that could potentially work in cannabis, and seeing it's a lot of trial and error.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for example, a guy I interviewed some time ago, James Seabrook, he's one of the leaders at Vitalis, which is, of course, a manufacturer of extraction equipment. Mm-hmm. And he brought his expertise from the oil and gas industry, dealing with pressurization and all of those factors, and brought that into the cannabis world, to your point of, you know, there's so much mixing of people's expertise across industries.
Exactly. And it's finding ways to try and make those particular skills viable within the industry. Looking at concentrate specifically, there is a long history of manufacturing different extracts, mainly in food products, vanilla, mint, whatever it would be. But cannabis is obviously a little trickier when it comes to that. So a lot of the companies are bringing in these extraction professionals from other food industries and attempting to make that work within cannabis.
Okay.
And that really does lead to a lot of interesting experimental processes. And
I bet it does. Give me an example of one.
We've done some very interesting things when we were developing the concentrates with Aurora, without going into too much detail, because there are NDAs and such.
Of course, no, don't want to break any of those.
So we would do mixtures of black market techniques with food extraction techniques, and seeing what kind of reaction we would get from the cannabis, and based on the professionals that we brought in from the black market as well as the food industry. And
right,
some of the products that came out of that were quite interesting, and some of them were quite uninteresting.
I bet. And when you refer to those two industries, which are the extraction methods that each of those industries is bringing to the table?
It really is a perfect amalgamation, in my opinion. There's a lot of companies now that are really focusing on cannabis extraction equipment and closed loop hydrocarbon extractions.
Right.
And that a lot of that we've gotten a lot of guidance from the food industry, not so much with the hydrocarbons, but closed loop extractions. There's a lot of CO2 extraction that's happening.
Right.
And that's where you get a lot of the food industry is in the actual extraction process. But after that, there's a very long and arduous post-processing, which will then determine which product you get out of your hash oils.
For those that are listening, give us just a few examples of what those different end products could be from that first extraction.
Yeah, of course. Initially, it depends on what type of hydrocarbons you're using. So we'll use, for an example, butane hash oil, or BHOs. Those most commonly get made into either live resins or batters. You can also really cook it for a while and you end up with some diamonds, some caviar. So there's a lot of different end possibilities from that post-processing.
Yeah, certainly are. And the caviar is basically terp sauce.
And
it's THCA diamonds.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. It's a mix between the two elements. It's a reintroduction essentially of the terp sauce back to the diamonds.
It's astounding what's happening with concentrates these days.
Yeah, it's not just your joint out the window anymore.
No, it certainly isn't just your joint out the window anymore. It's like, okay, what the heck am I going to go with before or with now? I mean, and as you mentioned, so the live resin and the live rosin, you guys have both, I'm assuming, in some of your concentrates?
I'm not sure where Aurora has gone since I parted ways with them.
Okay.
But I know within Premium 5, we have 22 different SKUs and different items.
Yeah, we're carrying, I think we're carrying almost a dozen right now.
Yeah, and we're currently in mass production for the largest shipment that we will have ever sent to BC, actually.
Yeah, that's you referenced that in your email earlier this week. I found that intriguing because I'm sure some of that product is going to end up in our store.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah,
I really look forward to sampling some of that. I know you do have some caviar. There's also some THCA diamonds, a couple of hash rosins, and there's a bunch more. Check it out. Check out the Premium 5 website, and of course, I'll probably post a link so make it easier for people to check out those products. Anyways. To get back to one thing you mentioned fairly early on in our discussion, Mike, and that's the Health Canada regulations that you face on the production floor. Give us, again, as naive consumers, give us a sense of how those Health Canada regulations are impacting the day-to-day operation of the extractions, for example.
Yeah, for sure. So the Health Canada regulations, in my opinion, are very necessary and are very important to maintaining the industry itself. There's still a lot of learning to be done on the side of Health Canada as well as on the side of LPs. When it comes to the actual production, concentrates is a little bit of a gray zone right now because it's still fairly fresh after 2.0. We're just coming up on a year, and there's been a lot of ground made in a very short amount of time.
So, well, and did not hydrocarbons just become approved by Health Canada recently? Like that didn't happen at the start of 2.0, did it?
No, not quite. For hydrocarbons, it was a whole nother aspect because there's a whole nother safety issue that goes along with that. When you're dealing with massive amounts of highly explosive material, everything has to be to the T by the book.
Yes.
So making sure that everything follows those proper guidelines was the first major challenge from any LP that wanted to get into the extraction space. It's not just a throw up a space, gown up, and away you go. There was a lot of classification one, division one spaces, which are essentially means there can't be any spark of any kind, no electronics, no anything.
Sure, of course.
So having that in place, having all of that was probably the biggest challenge for any LP is actually creating the space to do hydrocarbon extractions.
Okay.
And beyond that, once that's completed, then there is a rigorous testing that goes in for residual solvents, which Health Canada does have a tolerance for on that as well, which I think we'll also get dialed in. It's currently, if I remember correctly, and don't quote me, I believe it is 10,000 parts per million. We always shot for less than 1,000.
And that's what I've always heard from people who are doing extraction. They had a lower, as you mentioned before, a lower guide than Health Canada had.
Yeah, and that's generally a rule of thumb that I find most LPs are doing is always bringing their standards above Health Canada because I think the industry kind of agrees that the Health Canada regulations are a great start, but they're not quite enough. And I know that there will be a lot of production individuals that are now yelling at me, but
well, that's okay. You can't hear them because, you know, by the time this is recorded, you know, they're just a figment of your imagination.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's definitely a struggle trying to balance out and learn at the same time, meeting the demand of the market as well as making sure it's completely safe for consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. There's certainly a lot of challenges there. And so how can consumers help get companies like yours there? What kind of feedback would help in the loop? And is there anything else that we should be doing to help inform the industry?
Definitely any feedback is good feedback, even if it's negative or a complaint or anything like that. Feedback is always necessary and it's always appreciated, regardless, because that only will help us to improve.
Right, of course.
So anytime anyone has any feedback for any reason, of course, you can contact your provincial distributor, or you can come back to the LPs if you have any questions about the product as well.
Yeah, and I'm always advising everybody who purchases in our store, on every package you get, there is an email address for the company that represents it, and there's a phone number as well. Use them.
Yes, 100%.
They're there for that purpose.
Yeah.
And they get hidden, I guess, because they're in such small font. Mm-hmm. And until somebody has a problem, they really don't care.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So that's good to know. I'm glad to hear that there is an avenue for that information to get through.
The Premium 5 website is currently in the process of being vamped. And in there, there's going to be an entire learning section about hydrocarbon extractions, concentrates, BHOs, and it's going to be a whole wealth of information. So,
oh, that's very cool. Because there's a bunch of thirsty minds out there,
yeah,
that want to know more as these products come to market.
For sure.
Now, this may be a tough question for you, and I don't mean it to be, but I'm just curious from an industry perspective. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the price of concentrates are going to come down eventually in the country compared to what they currently are, which is, in certainly in our case, significantly more than what the black market prices were?
Yeah, that's not so much a hard question as much as it is a tricky one. There's a lot of aspects that go into the pricing of cannabis products. There's a lot of steps in the chain,
okay,
down the line, and of course everyone has to make their dollar.
Yep, absolutely.
The biggest issue, I think, is the regulations of the individual provinces themselves, and that's why you end up with such a large variance in price from province to province.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the distributors are the ones that in large set the price.
Yeah.
We as an LP have to work with the provinces to ensure that at the end of the day, everyone wins.
Okay.
And sometimes that means we have a little more freedom to kind of make things more affordable. And sometimes that means that the particular government entity feels that they need a little bit of a higher margin themselves.
Yeah, yeah, which we certainly feel here in BC.
Yes, yeah.
Buying from our competitor, mm-hmm, in essence. So, yeah, but that's the way it is. As you indicate, there's different ways of it works all across our country.
Exactly.
The other thing that you mentioned as we began our discussion was debunking some myths. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that we haven't covered off in terms of a myth that you think really needs to be covered off and had some truth put on it?
One of the other things is the packaging and the labeling.
Okay.
A lot of people, it's a very common complaint per se that there's a lot of excess packaging. The labels are confusing to read.
Yeah, and certainly I'm just going to interrupt you for just a moment, Mike. The packaging is absolutely the thing we hear the most about in the store. Mm-hmm. We now have people who are making their decisions based on the fact of whether their cannabis is coming in a hard plastic container or it's coming in one of those more flexible envelopes. Mm-hmm. And it has been happening more and more now. People are literally making their choice based on what is coming in the envelope rather than the hard plastic containers. So to your point, please carry on.
The biggest challenge when it comes to the packaging is the amount of information that Health Canada requires for the label.
Yes.
So there, the labeling is probably the one point that Health Canada has that is probably, in my opinion, a little bit too much. I understand it needs the warning labels and everything. That's fine. But
that's a whole other discussion. Those warning labels.
Yeah, 100%.
Some of the verbiage in those warning labels.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. They can be quite aggressive. But the labels themselves, the biggest issue surrounding them is Health Canada actually has guidelines for the size of the font, the type of font, the spacing of the font.
Of course.
So at that point, you're now all of a sudden, you have a 1 gram of concentrate and you have to put it in a container that'll fit.
That'll fit that font.
All of that font. So in a lot of ways, the LP's hands are really tied to what packaging they're using. There's constantly looking for alternative packaging methods, like potentially hemp or some other form of renewable. But for the time being, there really isn't much that can be done about it.
I hadn't thought of it from that perspective before. I mean, we have lots of different concentrates in all kinds of different containers, and I never realized that the size of the container was somewhat dependent on the label that had to be provided and the associated font. So thanks for giving me that myth busting.
Yeah, it was one of the ones that always kind of grinded my gears. Being in the packaging departments.
So has the industry turned out to be what you'd hoped in your new position? Are you enjoying it? Are you having fun?
It's not what I expected. I don't think anyone expects this industry as to be what it is. Even if you come from a manufacturing background, it's a whole nother ball game. And personally, I'm having the time of my life.
Oh, good for you.
It's a great time for me. I'm enjoying what I do. I enjoy growing with the industry and constantly having to be on my toes with the latest and greatest thing.
Well, you know what time it is now?
What time is it, Gary?
It's time for my hot seat questions.
Oh, and I'm ready.
I think you're ready. None of them are too terribly difficult. And surprisingly enough, they all revolve around cannabis. So we'll see where we go from there. So your favorite cultivar, Mike?
Right now, I would have to say that it would be any strain crossed with Tangies. The Tangies really, really have me right now. But I also do have another cultivar right now, Colombian Gold.
That's been popping up a lot lately, too. I haven't had a sample of that.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's very very nutty.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to getting a sample of that. So, do you prefer joints or vape?
Personally, I it's joints for me.
Okay.
I do have a vape, and I'm trying to get into it.
Is that a dry herb vaporizer or a vape pen?
A dry herb, yeah.
Okay, well done.
So and that's because as I'm getting into this, I tend to be more of a connoisseur of things. I was a beer connoisseur for many years.
So you have a background in that. Nice. That's cool.
Yeah. So thinking about it now that I'm in concentrates, the world of terpenes has become so prevalent.
And what a world.
Oh, what a world. Holy.
They are our future.
Yeah, 100%.
The more and more we all understand, and especially the LPs and in those extractions and pulling out all those terpenes in that caviar and delicious. And speaking of delicious, what would be your favorite munchie?
Personally, it's got to be M&M peanuts.
Oh, okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Do you prefer edibles or flour?
Flour, personally. I've had some very negative experiences with edibles, but that was my own fault and my own doing.
As many have.
Yeah.
Let me guess, you took some and it didn't work after an hour and a half. You took some more?
Quite the opposite, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't you tell me about this now then?
I had a roommate that had made brownies, and she came to me and said, "Here, would you like a special brownie?" I was like, "Sure, yeah, that's great." And she said, "Well, only eat half." And I was like, "Okay, that's fair." So I had the half, and then later on, she proceeded to tell me, "Yeah, there's about a full ounce in this 4x4 pan." That was not a fun time.
Yeah. So you had a bit of a green out before the night was over,
oh,
did you?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, I've experienced that, and they are not fun.
No.
Yeah, that kind of turned me off of edibles as well. So I'm more of a flower guy too.
Yeah.
So now the last couple of questions are all related to verbiage. I've always been fascinated with how the verbiage changes across our country mm-hmm. when we're talking about the same thing. So do you have a particular name for a running joint, a joint that's burning on you?
Not really. I mean, if anything, okay. We just call it a runner.
Yeah, see, well, there you go. So that's what it is. Canoe is the most popular answer to that. Huh. And a white rabbit is the other one. A white rabbit came out of Quebec.
Yeah.
And out of Quebec, when they're talking about an eighth, as we call it here in BC, they say a 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a particular term that you use or the people you know use to refer to that same amount of cannabis?
Yeah, I've always called it an eight piece.
An eight piece out there. See, thank you, Mike. You've introduced a new term. That's the first time I've heard the eight piece. Very interesting.
Yeah.
And where are you from?
I was born and raised in Edmonton, Alberta.
Okay. So that's I would call that the way that you refer to an eighth in Alberta as an eight piece.
Yeah, I can't say for sure for everywhere, but myself for sure.
Well, that's very cool. I'm glad I asked that question. That's a fabulous way to end our conversation too.
Yeah, I had a good time.
Well, thank you very much, sir. You enjoy the rest of your night, and I really appreciate you taking time to be on the Cannabis Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This is the Cannabis Podcast.
When I first started the Cannabis Podcast, one of the reasons that I did it was I had been a longtime proponent of cannabis. It had been in my life for, almost 50 years at the time, and it was a big part of my life. And I wanted to make a statement that I thought legalization mattered, that legalization was important. And this story kind of relates to why I felt that way. I had some bad luck, shall we say, in my younger days with me and cannabis and the law. And this is one of those incidents. At the time, I was working in the interior of British Columbia. Obviously, I was in radio because I think you've figured out that by now if you were a regular listener. And at the time, I was doing a show that went from 1 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon and then from 4 to 6. So 3 to 4 was what was called my lunch hour. And here's how I spent that lunch hour. Now, if you have listened to the podcast at all, you know that I had a tendency to smoke some cannabis when I was working in radio. Well, this was one of those rare occasions when I did not smoke any cannabis before I went on the radio because I was currently in the market to find some cannabis. And that's what this story is all about. So comes time for my lunch hour. And in this particular town, there was really only a couple of places, one bar and one pool hall that we kind of went all the time when we were looking to find some cannabis. So that's where I went. First of all, I went to the bar, a well-known bar. And as soon as this guy who was, for some reason, being really helpful, and he decided that he wants to help me find some pot. So he's taking me to somebody who's going to be able to get some for me. We open the door to this bar, and immediately I see the two narcs that were our, and for those who don't know, narcotics officers. I see them. They're right over there, and it's like he's got a flag over top of my head saying, "Here he is. I'm about to take him somewhere else. Come and get him." Of course, that's how it looks in hindsight. When I was going through the actual event, I had no idea I was being set up. Turns out I was. We left there, went to the pool hall a couple blocks away, and down there's a set of stairs that you go down. Of course, it's a pool hall, deep, dark in the basement, and climbed down there. And miraculously, almost as soon as I got to the bottom of the stairs, there was somebody who was willing to sell me a lid of pot. A lid back then was, I think, about $15. It was probably about a quarter ounce, something like that. Sure enough, ended up with a lid in my hand, and I see some feet coming down those stairs. And lo and behold, it's those two narcotics officers who were sitting in the pub and saw me come in, and they were finishing up. Well, fortunately, I had enough time to toss the bag before they got to me. I tossed it in the garbage. They did not see me toss it. So therefore, they couldn't do anything with that particular bag with me. But here's where the stupidity of the moment comes to bear, because I had forgotten that I had a little chunk of hashish in the pocket of my shirt. And that's what I got busted for. They took me back to the cop shop with a couple other people. Well, yeah, that's right. They took the guy who turned me in just so they could go through the pretend, play along that, in fact, you know, he was involved too and he got busted. Yeah, he did not. He was immediately let go. I know he was making a deal by bringing somebody in so he would get a, he was always in trouble. So there you go. I ended up again, and now I'm still in my lunch hour. And we are getting close to the time when I am supposed to be back on the air for the next hour. And they know it too. They're pushing the line. They're making it take a little bit longer to go through all the paperwork. Finally, at about 10 minutes to 4 o'clock, they let me out the door with, of course, a summons to appear at some point in the future. And I madly rush off to the radio station, get there in time, get the first record started after the news was finished. And I thought, I better let my boss know before anything else happens. So I went into the station manager's office, who, by the way, was one of the best bosses I ever worked for. Just a dear man. And I told him what had happened. And the only thing he ever said to me about it was, you spend your lunch hours in an interesting way. And I really took that to heart. And I appreciated that because, of course, then the radio station ran the story at 4 o'clock in the morning, but the local newspaper didn't. Front page of the paper, local DJ gets busted. That's why legalization matters. Because nobody, regardless of how old they are, should ever again face a criminal charge for possession of this wonderful plant we call cannabis. And that wraps up another episode. I'm going to likely be doing a Cultivar Corner on one of the Premium 5, coincidentally, concentrates that I picked up. And I think we're going to do that. Use my terp pen. And next week, or next episode on Cultivar Corner, we're going to have a taste of Maple Burt Live Resin Caviar. Sounds delicious. And I'm sure it tastes delicious, too. Remember, if there's ever anything you would like to comment on, send a note to info@cannabispodcast.com, including any comments on the podcast, a strain perhaps you'd like me to take a look at, or somebody you think that I should interview. And of course, if you want to take a peek at any of the links that were featured on the episode today, you'll find them back at cannabispodcast.com. And that wraps it up for episode 55 of the Cannabis Podcast.
From the Cannabis Infused Studio, high above the Okanagan Valley, this was the Cannabis Podcast.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Are you looking for the next great cannabis business to invest in? Then you need to check out the MJ Bulls podcast. Hi, I'm Dan Humiston. Join me each week as I speak to both cannabis entrepreneurs who are raising capital and cannabis investors who are investing capital. Our 10-minute episodes are perfect for the busy investor. Start listening to the MJ Bulls podcast today, wherever you listen to podcasts, and who knows, maybe you'll discover the next cannabis unicorn.